Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban. Today we are talking about the pulse of the global cannabis industry, and we are joined by president and founder of Cloverleaf University, Chloe Villano. Chloe, thank you for being here with us.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
And tell us, Chloe, how have you been holding up in the last month as we've all been affected by coronavirus? How has life changed for you?
Well, you know, I own Cloverleaf University, so we are the first cannabis and hemp university approved by the Department of Higher Education, and we received executive orders from the Department of Higher Education to stop holding in-person classes, and, you know, we're given the option to switch to webinar. So just like many schools, you know, we kind of had to learn to do that distance learning, and then just kind of make some arrangements to really move with this online curriculum.
Well, so it's a lot of different things were going on in 2019 and at the end of last year. And one of the things I wanted to highlight is the Cannabis Business Awards. 2019 was a really big year, not to mention the big party you put on in Las Vegas around MJ Biz. That was very exciting. In addition to Cloverleaf University, can you talk a little bit about what alternative plans look like for your events, which are always so well attended and really just, you know, fun industry gatherings of really, really diverse, interesting people? How do you recreate that? What do you do? What's the alternative there?
Well, you know, it's so funny that you ask, because we've been having meetings about this for the past couple weeks, and we've decided to hold our events, even if we hold them online. And we actually did a 420 icons event where we listed the top 100 icons of all time that contributed to cannabis culture for this past 420, because it was April 20, 2020, which was a big one, right? And so we had so many celebrities, industry icons on there, like John Sinclair, we had Keith Strope, Bob Snodgrass was even hitting his own steamroller on the show. I mean, I realized a lot of things by doing that event. And, you know, in the end, I think award shows come down to production, and we all watch the Oscars. And so we're going to be doing a pre-recorded version of our award show this year, and we're going to do everything online. And we're actually looking at working with a couple of really big networks on it. So, you know, we have breakout rooms, chat rooms, and all kinds of different things that we're incorporating into it. But it's really going to be just a huge, massive production. And it's going to be like a 2-hour show that you would watch on TV. And that will be the Cannabis Business Awards this year. And then we're hoping that we can still hold our October 24th show in Miami and our Vegas show December 1st. But of course, we have to see how that goes.
Yeah, we certainly don't know how things are going to go, but very excited to see what comes next. And I definitely think you're onto something. It's about adapting, not panicking. It's about using technology. And you know what? The way people have adapted to using technology in lieu of anything face-to-face has really reinforced that you can connect with people that way. And to your point, you put on a big award show with a lot of production value. I mean, look at Saturday Night Live the other day. It was, you know, basically a Zoom home video thing, and it was extremely entertaining, and everybody loved it. You put some production value behind it. You're way ahead of the game, as always. But going back to the Cloverleaf University scenario and how COVID's affected it, same kind of question, same kind of concept. No in-person classes. Obviously, you've already had built-in capability for online and the like. But what's the future hold for Cloverleaf in terms of the COVID impact?
Well, you know, cannabis is now deemed an essential business through this whole COVID disaster, which is huge for our industry. I mean, you're not going to be able to repeal that now. You know, you're going to allow margaritas to go and all these different systems that are going to be proven to have worked, right? So I think that there's a lot of jobs in our industry that are going to be created. It's going to continue to grow. And so as we see our industry essential, I think that education is just as essential. And we've been teaching all of our classes online, available via webinar, as well as on, you know, in person. So there really isn't that many changes for us. What's really awesome is we just finished our back end for Cloverleaf University for our online. And so it's a complete interactive gamification online learning system. And we already have over 50 classes recorded, and we're getting ready to launch those. So you'll be able to, you know, work at your own pace and get certified in the cannabis industry, which will be really awesome. And you can also circumvent the residency to work in the state of Colorado if you take a class at Cloverleaf University.
Oh, well, that's so exciting, Chloe, and, you know, really speaks to just how legitimate and how much Cloverleaf has done to set the standard for cannabis education. I mean, you guys have been around since 2009, and everybody in this industry, I mean, we talk about it so much on the Hoban Minute with the guests that we have. Everybody talks about the importance of education for every part of the supply chain, for everybody involved. I would like to have you speak a little bit about why education is so important to you and why you originally set out to create Cloverleaf University.
You know, when I first started in this industry, I was one of the first few consultants, and there weren't that many. And back then, we were working overtime, setting up businesses, working with local and state municipalities, and kind of the first system that was ever really created for cannabis businesses, right? And I had so many clients, and I realized in a very short time that it was just going to snowball out of control. And how were we going to be able to teach a real system to all of these people? And I was already putting them in classes and in groups and trying to teach them, you know, this is how you fill this out. This is what you have to do. This is how you stay compliant. And so eventually the school made sense. And we knew that it would go on a national level and now even a worldwide level, and that there was going to be a real need for these businesses to, one, understand how to get a business and set up a business, and two, for employees to be able to get the credentials they needed to have jobs in the industry.
You know, Chloe, think about how far the industry's come in that regard as well, because I was just thinking before we called you, just to say, you know what, you've gone back in this industry a long time, an OG, if you will. When I first interacted with you, you were serving as either a legal assistant or a paralegal, and we needed a witness for a case, and the attorney you worked with, I can't recall, that witness needed an affidavit or a waiver of service or something like that. And you interacted with my staff and, you know, showed them who was boss. And, we ultimately did get what we needed, but you got it done your way. So that was cool. That was many, many years ago. But,
I mean, I was a paralegal when I first started, so that would have been the very beginning.
Yeah, that was a while ago, and you know, again, sort of so many of those things happen over the course of this time. But look at where we are today. Like you said, essential business, big year for cannabis. I know that you know you're a big participant and a big sort of visionary as it relates to the hemp side of the industry. I see hemp as having a tremendous opportunity in light of what's happening under this COVID scenario. I see that we're gonna be planting a lot of hemp, not just registering the acres like we did last year, but planting a lot of hemp for a lot of different purposes to sort of really help this plant become something that services multiple industries. What's your perspective on that? How do you think we come out of COVID and this treats cannabis as the plant?
Well, I think that, you know, right now, our industry provides so many solutions, both economically, environmentally, medically. There's just so many solutions, whether it's cannabis or hemp. But once you bring hemp into it, I mean, we're talking about a federally legal substance now that is, you know, one of the best building blocks that nourishes crops and soil. You know, you can plant it every year, so farmers want to keep planting. And you can make the same things that anything can be made out of hemp, plastic, building supplies. And I think right now what's so different is that we've seen this kind of, I guess act of war, right, from China with, you know, just putting off this pandemic so they could get a trade deal signed. So I think that there's a lot of uncertainty is where are these products going to be manufactured now? And I think there's going to be a lot of manufacturing facilities that are set up in the United States. And I think that we're going to be surprised to see how many of those have a lot of that hemp funding behind them and new products that start to be created and a real manufacturing economy that is worldwide that rises here in the United States. And I think we're going to look at ways that we make things and we're going to have codes and standards. And I think that hemp is going to really take a lead in that position. I mean, and the numbers are just phenomenal when you look at the demand. So really, there's a lot of opportunity here if you really look at this to be a really good thing and really even boost our economy better than it was before.
Well, to your point, though, as you look at places like Mexico, which are moving forward on legalization measures and ultimately a segue, perhaps, an introduction to Mexico's participation with its 136 or 135 million people, putting them into the cannabis economy and understanding that the packaging need, to your point, can be relocated and probably has been in some part already from the Far East to Mexican manufacturers who will then in turn participate in the industry and in theory have relationships with North American, U.S.-based companies. We've seen that with CBD prior to, I think, about 2 months ago, the Cofebris, their FDA equivalent, was licensing the import of CBD products into Mexico. So, you know, all of this stuff is related in some form or fashion. But let's look at the marijuana side. The fact that it is an essential business. Do you think this prompts any legislative or federal legal reform surrounding the plant? Because I think we're seeing it happen all over the world. What's up with our government?
Well, you know, we are run by, obviously, you know, a certain group of people who own a lot of things. And you know, pharmaceutical companies are, I think really what it comes down to is that there's certain people that just don't want it to be legal. But the cat's out of the bag, Bob. I mean, we're almost there. And I mean, now that it's a system that's proven to work, it's also a system that brings in billions of dollars in revenues. And pretty soon, I mean, the old saying, money talks and bullshit walks. I mean, eventually the states are going to want that tax money. They're going to want it, you know, in this system. And I think federally, it only makes sense at some point where we can start. I mean, even pharmaceutical companies really have a huge advantage if we legalize marijuana. So I think we need to just, you know, realize the cat's out of the bag. And I don't know. I mean, I'm always teeter-tottering between 2 years and 5 years. But I mean, I know in Denver that a lot of clients and friends and people I know here with dispensaries, their sales are going up during this time. So the business is growing. And I mean, eventually, you know, all these oil and gas guys, all these people, they're going to want to play in this business because this is where the money is. And so, you know, you can't keep it down forever. It's going to emerge. And eventually we're going to elect people who are on our side because they do work for us.
Well, and you really can't keep it down forever. And that is, I think, the lesson from industrial hemp. I want to come back to that for just a second because you mentioned this great point about China. When you look at it right now, the amount of fiber that is all the hemp textiles in the United States, it seems like, come from China, or at least the vast, vast majority. You referenced this trade deal. Now it looks like China is going to be in a position to have to import more hemp material from the United States, although it's not really clearly defined exactly what it is. But I'm interested, what is it going to take for the United States to position itself as the global hemp leader? Is that something you think that companies here in the U.S. are interested in? What are we going to do to have to build ourselves into that global supply chain and become and rival someone like China in hemp production and hemp manufacturing and processing?
Well, you know, it's so interesting because China, I always really believed, would grow 50% of the world's hemp. But looking at where they're at now, I mean, you still have to be able to sell 50% of the world's hemp, right? So if in America we're creating those products and we really are advancing, I mean, just huge strides in science and even in crop value, and we're planting acres and acres of hemp, thousands of them. And so I think I think what we need to do is we need to stay on the front line. We need to be the one who actually owns the intellectual property, who stays on that innovative side and really work with our Department of Agriculture. We already have these systems in place. You know, we grow corn, we grow fruit, we have, you know, roses, all these different types of crops. We can easily take those regulations, plug in hemp, and the farmers would rather grow hemp because it nourishes their land. Whereas there's a lot of other crops like corn where they have to take years off. So, I mean, we have a lot of farmers in the United States of America still, and I think that as long as we start buying American, which I see happening in the very near future as we go through this, you know, tumultuous relationship that we have with China and figuring out these trade deals, you know, who knows? We might be the ones that start exporting those hemp products to the rest of the world.
Well,
I think that's going to be the key.
Talk about China for a second, because you were recently in China. In fact, with one of our partners, Dave Nagel, what was the perspective? Yeah. How were you welcomed? What was that all about?
You know, I have to say, Bob, I love the people in China. I mean, they're just such great people. And we went there to keynote a hemp conference, an investment conference, where they were interested in putting money into United States hemp companies because they have such limited regulations for what they can do with hemp. And so, you know, we went out there, we met the most wonderful people. They threw me a birthday party. I mean, we were treated with just such respect and such love, and they gave us their very best. And I think that there's something very special to be said about, you know, the Chinese people and how we look at them and compared to like what their government's doing, right? Because it's not one and the same. But, you know, business is business. And I think that, you know, China really screwed up in this area because, you know, they didn't announce this COVID until 6 weeks after they found out. So now a lot of people don't trust them. And I think the most important thing about creating trade and just good relationships with people who will continuously buy your products is to have trust. You know, it's in America we trust, right? Wasn't that an old saying? And so, you know, if we don't trust where our products are coming from and we don't have a good relationship with China, we're automatically going to want to buy in the United States.
Well, on a completely un-cannabis related point, I think, you know, you make such a wonderful distinction, which is don't judge a country by its government. Don't judge all the people in a country by its government. That's something Bob can definitely speak to, you know, with all of his global travels. But you raised a great point, which is, you know, is there, you know, China producing 50% of the world's hemp, but do they have 50% of the global hemp market? And I want to talk about the CBD market for a second, if we can. You know, it seems like the U.S. CBD market has been a driver. It's indicated to other countries, wow, this really is an opportunity. China has led on the fiber side of things, but as you said, there's very, very limited regulations allowing for cannabinoid products in China, is my understanding. So I'm kind of wondering, you were in China, do you think there is a big consumer market for cannabinoid products amongst the Chinese people?
Well, you know, they are really huge in hemp and hemp production, but they don't like the word CBD that much. You know, you don't see CBD oils and those type of things being created. At least I didn't while I was there. I was looking at major hemp production facilities, right, where they can do, you know, manufacturing and a lot per pound and looking at that equipment and if that would be a good fit for the United States. But, I mean, I think we will buy equipment from them, but will we, you know, have them source all of our products? And I really think between you and I that China could potentially, I mean, this COVID caused them a lot of problems. Their manufacturing facilities have also been closed down, and we've had to source products elsewhere. So the question is, I think Forbes even put an article out, is China even going to be the world's one-stop trade center here shortly, or is it already too late? So I believe that if we just keep setting up businesses in the United States, I think we should start manufacturing our own products here, and that there's going to be a lot of investors and people who want to put the money in so that we can do that. When it comes to CBD, we're so far advanced. You know, they might be able to make clothes and fabrics and stuff out of hemp, but their laws don't really call for the type of CBD products and science and all of that stuff that we have here. So we're way ahead.
Yeah, to your point, Chloe, I visited China in 2016, and we went to Southwest China, a town called Kunming, a small city, only 12 million people, you know, something absurd like that, a remarkable place. But 3 hours to the north of Kunming was, if I recall correctly, Xiaoteng, was allegedly the largest hemp farm in the world. It was, you know, as far as the eyes can see, in every direction. You walk through this, it was like a jungle. It was remarkable. Now, the interesting fact about that was that the genetics behind that hemp were not really hemp genetics. There were about 14% THC, but the genetics were such that they grew long and tall and didn't really flower or produce a lot of the resins. So that was an interesting thing. But Eric, to your point, in China, CBD demand, it's an export market. Yes, there's a burgeoning middle class, or at least, you know, who knows how this pandemic affects China. But at the end of the day, by the way, do you believe for a second that there was only 518 people in Beijing that were infected with the coronavirus? That's what the data says. There's 18 million people in Beijing and only 500 got the coronavirus. This is so anyway, another story for another day. But at the end of the day, that people are fearful of using cannabis because of the history of laws and how it was deemed a drug and it was always for export. So I think we'll continue to see that. But as things transition.
Well, and also.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that, you know, the whole, you know, THC minimums, you know, the 0.1 or 0.03, that, you know, what we're putting in, you can't have anything like that in CBD out in China. So, like I said, they do have very strict laws. I think it's execution if you get caught with weed out there, if you get caught growing or manufacturing, right?
I don't know the penalty, but it is something. It is something steep, and it certainly caused them to your average person to sort of view it through that really, you know, negative lens. And you know, who can understand being raised and living in that country and how that affects your mentality and your perspective on things. But you know what today is, Eric? By the way, we talked about this before. It is Willie Nelson's birthday. And we asked Chloe if she had a Willie Nelson story. And Chloe, your response was?
Well, my response was I've smoked his weed. I've been inside his dispensary, but I've never actually met Willie Nelson personally. But I've always been a very big fan. And so I definitely want to give a shout out to Willie Nelson for his birthday for sure. And I hope he's selling a lot of weed.
Yeah, wherever you are out there, Willie, happy birthday. We're all pulling for you. Chloe, I have one last, just to bring it, you know, we've been talking about the global perspective here for a little bit, talking about China. I want to bring it home. And I want to ask you, you know, you guys do so much wonderful work on the education side with Cloverleaf University. What is your message to cannabis owners right now, people whose businesses have been affected by this pandemic? How do you think they can weather this storm? What advice do you have for them?
You know, just stay strong and stay motivated. I mean, cannabis business owners they're used to, you know, swimming upstream without a paddle or rowing upstream without a paddle, right? Things have never been easy. And so I think that we're an industry that can adapt very well, but you always have to think outside of the box, and we're very good at it. So, you know, how do we just keep going and really adapt to this new online and all of this stuff? Because we're all on there. And if you look at the numbers for how many people are going on social media every day, I mean, the numbers are there, the sales are there. So just find what works for your business and just keep working really hard. It'll happen.
Absolutely. Well, Chloe, we can't wait to have you on again to talk more about the curriculum that you offer at the university and capture a little bit more of your personal story, because it is so interesting. We thank you for joining us on the Hoban Minute, and stay safe out there.
Thanks, Chloe.
Yes, thank you. All right, thanks, Bob. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Hoban Minute special series on coronavirus and cannabis.
You can head on over to Hoban.law for more information on this podcast or the Hoban Law Group. If you have any ideas for subjects that we should be covering or any questions you want to pose to Bob or myself, shoot us an email at media@hoban.law. Stay tuned for the next episode on this special series, Coronavirus and Cannabis.